What happens when they let the grown-ups into VidCon? Can YouTube fend off Facebook and still move its best content to a paid service? And what does the combination of AT&T and DirecTV make? An overlarge dinosaur or a monster that will eat Hollywood? Welcome to Hacking TV, where we look at how electronic media is being rebuilt from the inside out. I'm Saul Hansel.
I'm Steve Rosenbaum.
And it's great to be back for the second alpha podcast of our series.
Indeed, and we have new microphones, which sound great and beefy, and we've added some new tech, and everything seems to be cranking right along.
We are cranking, and we are going to turn our attention in segment one to VidCon in Anaheim. You are just back from 3 days amid the glitterati of YouTube and a little bit of the old boring people that they finally invited from Hollywood and Sixth Avenue. You know, what sticks in your mind from the experience?
You know, it's funny. It really is two conferences. On one hand, it is 20,000 14-year-old girls that kind of seems like a Beatles conference. You know, people screaming and fans and, you know, lots of cute boys and lots of teenage girls. And then on the other hand, upstairs in the industry area, which is really very different, you have really everybody in the online video space. It's remarkable the quality of the guests they had. And it was a pretty, if you wanted to see a little bit of the future, Anaheim was the place to be.
And was there any interaction? You've been to any number of industry conferences of all sorts where the people like the Susan Wojcicki's and the Katie Couric's go to. Was there a difference in what they said or how they said, or was any interaction with the 20,000 YouTubers, or were they just two separate worlds?
No, Susan gave the keynote speech, and she said as clearly as possible, there is no doubt that we are here because of all of you. She was passionate and she was fan driven and she was embraced the uniqueness of the YouTube community. And then they gave an award to a bunch of creators that had massive views. And, you know, it was all manner of people, frankly, that I don't know well. But, you know, without a doubt, it was very, very focused on the fans.
One of the things you were talking to people in a track for creators, you had a chance to talk to people. What did you come away with as to what is on the mind of, and what did you learn about this vast, vibrant YouTube creator community?
You know, it's funny. Absolutely, people are focused on monetization. There's no doubt people are focused on it being a business and it being a successful business. But also people are focused on the community. I mean, I will tell you, and I'm going to show you in a minute, a little bit of video that I shot on the floor. I mean, the relationship between the YouTube stars and the fans is so personal and so kind of, I love you, no, I love you, and air kisses and, you know, selfies. I mean, it's really very, very intense.
It's interesting. It's reminding me, I, in the height of eBay in the early 2000s, I went to the eBay conference, eBay Live, that I think was in Orlando. And there was some of the same thing. I mean, eBay at its peak was a very vibrant community with all kinds of intrigue and so on, and relationship between personal vendors and sellers and audience to some degree. And I think all of that, a lot of that has washed away, but they're competing with, you know, on prices and service and very specific things that may not have the character of the of video and looking into a camera. But it's an interesting question. Are we in the expansion stage that will get replaced as things wash out into a new pecking order, or does this kind of everybody to everybody video communication stay a big piece of the video media landscape 10 years from now? I don't know whether you could see anything.
I think it stays a big piece. And I also think, you know, as much as YouTube was the big dog at this conference, Vessel was there And Jason was very impressive on stage in a way that I didn't expect. And Facebook was kind of floating over all the room. There was a sense that Facebook would play a big role at some point in the future. YouTube is the current owner of the space. And, you know, when Susan announced that they're now uploading 400 hours a minute, I mean, that's a massive number, 400 hours a minute. I mean, that's a startling, staggering statistic. But I think you're going to see more competition.
So what could you tell? Let's talk about YouTube for a second, because I think that they're in the center, and because it's such a big business and they're growing so much. I mean, I guess one of the other statistics that she said is their viewing hours are up 40% year over year. That's, you know, they're occupying a lot of people's time. I think she said that among a particular demographic was 18 to 34, they have more audience than any cable network. Since cable networks don't have all that high an audience, I'm not, in and of themselves, I'm not sure that's a humongous boast, but it's, you know, they're getting bigger. But they have, I'd argue, two different kinds of competition, right? So you've got the new social competition, Vine and Snapchat and Facebook, which is no slouch, on one side. And then you've got the big guys of various sorts trying to come in. Viacom was visible there, right? And Disney through Maker Studios was very visible. What can you tell about how well YouTube is getting along with the creators? Are the, you know, are, did you get a sense of a lot of people wanted to bolt and go work for one of the places that will give them more money or something else?
You know, I don't think anyone's bolting anywhere. I think the real answer is, you know, when you're a rock star and you're used to doing arena rock, you know, you can say you want to do little clubs, but the truth is you want to go back into the big room with the big crowd. And that's where, I mean, that's what YouTube has. So, I mean, I think that YouTube's relationship with folks like Vessel is tricky. I think on one hand, they want to be careful that people, you know, they'd like to let Vessel survive. I don't think there's any sense that they want to put Vessel out of business, but I don't think that they want Vessel to replace YouTube either.
And although that's one side, the other side, you might not give up YouTube for Vessel, but would you give up YouTube for HBO or Viacom?
I think the answer is no.
Okay.
Albie Hecht was on stage talking about HSN and really trying to pitch that HSN was the home for young, vibrant creators and to make news. And frankly, I'm not sure anybody in the room was crossing their YouTube membership card out to move over to cable TV. The kids don't watch cable TV. They just don't.
They don't watch HSN. They do watch HBO and they watch Netflix.
Yeah, but not in the same way. You know, not in that, you know, I put out a video and everybody goes nuts because my new video's out.
Right.
All right. Hey, listen, before we get any further, let me play for you this minute 30 piece that we shot on the floor, because it'll give you a sense of what happened at VidCon, and then we'll come back and talk about it. How's that?
Good morning, John.
Good morning, Hick.
We are currently on the main stage of VidCon 2015.
A lot of people here.
Friday.
There you go.
No. You say that. That's your line.
Yeah. John, very well said, and I'll see you on Friday.
Really good work there. That seemed totally...
surprises me that we've only been doing this for 8 years.
Yeah, I mean, 8 years is a lot of time by some measures, right? Obviously, it's most of YouTube's 10-year history.
We believe that anyone should be able to create content that everyone in the world can watch.
Thank you.
You know, the thing is, it was such a massive, massive show. And it's the Green Brothers who invented this thing essentially out of whole cloth 8 years ago. They said, hey, there's no real event for video. Why don't we make one? And they did. And it's, you know, 20,000 people, it's a no slouch event.
I think that we're at this moment, the fact that they invited the grownups, it's clear that YouTube has achieved something very important. It is part of the everyday experience of lots of people for both entertainment and information. Everybody's looking to it because it's got momentum around video use that nobody other than Netflix really has. But I also think it's unstable. And I think that there's a lot that is going to change over the next couple of years. And I mean, I see one tension, I don't know whether it was through there, is as much as Google is happy that it has this big thing and it has lots of attention and they're glad nobody else got it, they want it to be television and it's not television. And they're trying to build a paid service, they're trying to do, to push it to be something that is different than its community. I don't know whether we could tell yet whether that's gonna work or whether we're gonna have to come back in a year or two.
I think it's as simple as this. The young audience and now all of us have moved to phones. Facebook has a running head start on the mobile app. I mean, they asked Susan what her strategy was, and she said in her talk three things: mobile, mobile, and mobile. And she wasn't kidding. They're running hard to catch up to mobile.
But
and
that's,
they bet,
that,
and,
that's an important thing to say, but that's like saying to any media company in 1995, what's your strategy? Internet, internet, and internet. Fine, but there are a lot more ways to screw up a web business than to be successful. And just to say that you understand that people are connecting on a mobile phone doesn't actually tell you anything about what you're doing.
So here's, I think, the question. The question is, a year from today, when VidCon number 8 happens, or number 9, will there be someone that you refer to as a Facebook star? We have YouTube stars, but will there be a Facebook star?
What do you think?
Well, you know, there was just an article out that came out just the other day. It was talking about Facebook is now letting people post secret videos. They're really building a video library. They're really moving very fast in that regard. I think they have something going for them, which is, you know, you can pay them $1 for traffic and they can give you $2 worth of traffic in return. Their business is so strong that they can literally be very aggressive about how they use that traffic to generate audience.
My gut instinct is that Facebook is not going to be a successful competitor to YouTube. This is not to say that there aren't going to be unimportant, and I'll tell you why I think so. Because the essence of Facebook is I am either talking to my friends, private audience, small audience, or I am pointing to things that were published elsewhere. Nobody says to somebody, oh, go look it up on Facebook, implying that Facebook is a place that you publish to everywhere. Twitter publishes to everywhere. YouTube publishes everywhere. The web as a whole publishes everywhere. Facebook doesn't fit in your brain as a thing you find something on. Facebook is a place where cool things made or pointed to by your friends get pointed to you. And so unless Facebook, which has created a powerful connection to people being one thing, can get them to think of it as something else, I don't think it becomes a mass medium in that a place where everybody looks at everything.
So in this podcast, you and I are going to place certain bets, and we could put $1 on this, because I'm absolutely sure you're wrong.
Okay.
And so, I'll tell you why.
Why am I wrong?
Because the thing Zuckerberg has done brilliantly, when it was clear that a certain percentage of his audience didn't want to be on Facebook, he bought Instagram. And immediately he had a separate app that's a separate experience that's photo first, that a bunch of kids say, oh yeah, I hate Facebook. You say, well, what about Instagram? Well, they love Instagram. You say, well, you know, it's the same company. Like, no, it's not. Like, they don't even know it's YouTube, that it's Facebook. Messenger, same thing. Nobody who was a Facebook user said, oh, I really wish that the conversations would happen in another app. He built Messenger because he knew he had to do it and he wanted to be in the messaging space. And I think you're going to see a video app that's video centric, video first. And that I think you're right that not on the in the news feed, video is a mixed message. But I think you'll see them build a video product.
Look, yeah, my comment is about the Facebook brand, not the Facebook bank account, right? The Facebook bank account is big enough to buy all sorts of things, and you know they could buy, you know, they could buy a TV network if they wanted to, and dumber things have happened, but which we'll get to in a second. But the so no question, and I have enormous respect for Mark. Although it's worth realizing one of the things that's good about Facebook is they try a lot of stuff and not all of it works. Think about how important they looked like they were going to be as a gaming platform 5 years ago and how less important they are now.
That's true.
Gaming platform was a publishing platform that vaguely related to the news feed. And
fair enough. And you could say the same thing about Oculus. They want to be in VR. Unclear.
That's an acquisition. Who the hell cares? I mean, again, acquisitions are not about leveraging your strength, it's about leveraging your bank account. There's nothing about Oculus that is made better by being in Facebook.
All right, moving on. Okay. The video battles between Facebook and YouTube will be legion and be interesting, and we'll keep tracking them on the show.
You know, the thing is, as we've said and we will keep saying, the only way to make money in digital media is by running commercials when people don't want to see them. And not the only way, but the best way. And so they're not dumb. They want to run commercials too because that's how they're going to get paid. But it's hard. We'll come back to Snapchat. Today we're going to talk about either the most brilliant or the most stupid use of $49 billion, at least in the last week, which is AT&T's purchase of DirecTV. It's got approved by the government. I think you think that that's going to lead to a company that's going to matter more than before. Why?
I don't know that I think it's brilliant. I just think it's inevitable. I mean, I think, you know, you saw Verizon AOL, you know, so here's the story that I think is the most telling. So my friend Russ Sarnoff, who is of the family of the Sarnoffs, talks about his grandfather, you know, very, very early in his life.
For some of our audience that's not quite as old as we are, so.
And he said that the message his grandfather gave him as a young boy was, pay attention to the phone companies. They're going to own everything. You know, I mean, General Sarnoff, a long time ago, saw it coming. You know, when you've got a fire hose of money like both AT&T and Verizon do, and you think the future is video and video advertising and all video everything, I think what you do is you buy things. And I think, you know, DirecTV, you know, if you live in, you know, in New York, you don't think a lot about DirecTV because there's not a lot of satellite dishes for people that live in apartment buildings. But DirecTV has an enormous footprint. I think it was a very, very, very prescient decision.
So what does it get there? So here's what's right. So if AT&T is a mid-size cable company, right? So they buy programming from Hollywood, and DirecTV is one of the largest, what is it? I forget what the acronym is for the thing that includes cable and satellite. Multi-channel.
MPV.
Right.
Or, yeah.
Anyway, whatever it is.
MPVN.
They buy lots of video and they, you know, and so they get a slightly better rate on CNN and ESPN. So doubling down will reduce their costs a little bit. DirecTV doesn't own any programming, so it's very different than the AOL or the Comcast NBC. So in this case, you have a distribution company buying another distribution company, and you have to figure out two questions, right? What is the value of the satellite space? And I don't know all of the issues about whether those the bandwidth can be turned into cell phone bandwidth or there's something else they can do with it, but I just have to believe that the future is on demand and satellites are about linear. And so I think that the value of the satellite distribution of linear channels is going to go down rapidly. And I think that the business of bundles of cable TV networks is going to fragment rapidly. And while DirecTV, you know, is not, you know, AT&T can now compete with Sling and Verizon with an over-the-top bundle better than they could before, I just don't see the value. I mean, AT&T's market cap before the deal was $179 billion. So they spent, you know, a quarter of the value of this company that has real assets that aren't going to decline, like cell phones and, you know, monopoly wires, on something that I think is very transient value. We will see. But I will predict that within a decade, they are going to write off 30 of the $49 billion at least.
Really?
Absolutely.
See, this is your reporter, your cynical reporter DNA coming into play. And I appreciate it on this podcast because, you know, I don't have to answer to an editor to say I think it's a good deal. I don't have to back that up with facts. I can simply say it smells good to me. And, you know, I think AT&T was smart to plunk down their hard-earned money. I think the phone business is what the phone business is. And I think you versus flat. And I think, you know, now they've got another chip in the game.
And we haven't even talked about how the fact that the cost of running copper wire phone networks is the same no matter how many people subscribe. So as the cost, as the number of people cancel their telephone systems, and state and federal government regulations keep these companies from just pulling the plug on all of the copper, they are going to have a copper albatross around their neck of billions of dollars of proportion. Verizon dealt with that by just getting out of a bunch of states and reducing their footprint to places where they could afford to do fiber. AT&T can't do fiber because in the Northeast, they have telephone poles. In the Southwest, South and West, they dig phone lines underground, so the cost of running fiber to the home is just two or three times higher. So AT&T is cursed. From that, I don't think satellites help them one bit.
All right. You know. Let's not wrap the AT&T conversation without adding the name that I keep hearing associated with this conversation, which is Peter Chernin. You know, so AT&T put $500 million into Chernin's SVOD video play. He's been off on the edge of the universe. Now, all of a sudden, they're building a bigger video footprint. There's lots of conversation about how those pieces all fit together. Chernin's a super smart guy.
I think the world of Peter Chernin, so far, none of the Hollywood, we're going to take over YouTube and the internet entertainment world schemes, his and any of the others, have added up to much, but it's very, very early in the game.
Indeed it is, which is part of why we're doing this. All right, so last topic. Unless there's something that you want to discuss, I think we have to just take a minute to talk about Blip TV. I know the founders of Blip a long time. Dina Kaplan and I have been friends forever. They worked so incredibly hard at Blip. They really had passion to build a video service. They worked really hard at it. Finally, the investors got tired. They sold to Maker Studios. And we'll never really know what happened behind the scenes, but one can only guess that it's tricky to both be, you know, an MCN with YouTube as your number one, you know, one, two, and three, you know, bread and butter, and also theoretically a competitor with Blip that wants to be. And I think they just made a decision to focus on, at least for the time being, you know, not owning a competitor to YouTube.
Although, I'm not so sure YouTube cares because Blip is so tiny, but it's tough.
No. I don't think YouTube, don't get me wrong, I don't think YouTube said shut down Blip. I don't think there was any threat like that. I just think that at the end of the day, the Maker guys, you know, they've got plenty of work to do over at Maker, and I think Blip was
a distraction. Remember, it's not Maker, it's Disney. Disney, you know, and whatever Blip is in the context of Maker, it's just, you know, a tiny pimple in the Disney empire. And why, you know, it's easy to imagine somebody at Disney just saying, why should I even have to talk about this? Make it go away. That was, it's my fear about AOL and Verizon. which in AOL is a lot bigger in the context of Verizon, but it's still tiny. And the moment that AOL becomes more trouble than it's worth, Verizon may say, make it go away because it's not worth the money to think about it.
There were some rumors at VidCon about the AOL brand, but I can't say anything more than that.
Well, that's a tease.
And with that, we are out of time. And so we are wrapping episode 2. It's officially episode 1 of Hacking TV. Lots more coming down the road. So keep your eyes out for some news next week. I think there may be some surprises. And Saul, good to see you again.
And good to see you. This is fun. We'll pick it up next week.
See you next week.